All right, Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History. This is Howard Braun and Harold Kimball interviewing Paul Cohen on Tuesday, November 8, 1988 at his apartment. Now, will you give us your name and address, please?
Paul Cohen, 4601 Fifth Avenue, apartment 424, Pittsburgh, PA, 15213.
Now, Mr. Cohen, would you care to tell us about your family, beginning with your birth, where, and when, for example?
Well, I can tell you my parents came over to the United States in the early 1890s, when they were in their teens, 15 or 16 years old. They lived on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, were married here, and raised a family of eight children, surviving children. They bought a house in Brooklyn in 1910, moved from the Lower East Side to Brooklyn in 1910, and that's where I was born in 1912.
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. I have a twin sister, and we were the eighth and ninth children. One died in infancy. So I had seven, we had seven, six older brothers and sisters. Incidentally, my twin sister is still alive and she lives in Florida.
All right, your twin sister still lives in Florida. Could you tell us a little more about your father and mother? What year did they come to this country?
Well, I don't know exactly. Unfortunately, being way, way down in the in the family, I never had too much direct communication with my father and mother. You know, they were involved with the older children.
Yeah, what did he do?
My father was a ladies' tailor, a very good one. And I think he took some flyers in business, but these didn't pan out. So he worked practically all his life as a ladies' tailor at various shops.
Oh, independent.
No, he worked in... like the tailor in a fine ladies' wear shop.
Yeah. And anything of significance you'd like to say about your childhood growing up?
Well, I grew up in a neighborhood that has gotten well known since, but had a different character at the time, called East New York. You may have heard of East New York and Brownsville.
Brownsville, yeah.
Well, East New York is the next town. And it was a mixed population, very large fraction of Jewish people, Polish people. There was a big Polish church in the area, but there were, at that time, it was not a black neighborhood, there were very few blacks in that area, and it was quite at the edge of the developed area in Brooklyn. I remember when the Interborough Rapid Transit Company was first built, the subway, which is really an elevated thing, and that opened up, this was in 1919, and that opened up the area for large-scale development, and it grew very, very rapidly thereafter. Mm-hmm. But when I was a kindergartner or first grader, it was a very, very peripheral, or almost a frontier part of the city.
We didn't mention your father's name and your mother's name.
My father's name is Jacob, my mother's name is Rebecca.
And they lived a long life, did they?
Well, my father, they died in their 70s. Mm-hmm. My mother about 74, 75, my father 76 or 77, approximately the age that I am now. Mm-hmm. And he suffered the same diseases, at least, let's put it this way. I come by my diseases honestly.
Good.
My father had the same one.
What about the religious situation? Were you an Orthodox family?
Well, we were nominally Orthodox. My father was not personally very religious, but of course we observed all the holidays. And you have to understand that he had to work on Saturdays to earn a living in many cases, much of the time of his life. and so that he didn't attend services on Saturday, or during the week for that matter.
Yeah.
He worked long hours. And we were affiliated with a synagogue, which went through various throes of, you know, construction and expansion, etc., where I was bar mitzvah at age 13, of course. But I went to afternoon school, you know, all the time I was a kid.
Fader.
I started out with a teacher at home when I was a, you know, preschooler or a first grader. But I was not intrinsically religious, nor am I to this day. Very religious.
Well, how was the atmosphere in that area as far as anti-Semitism is concerned?
Well, there was a feeling of some tension, small tension, from the, you know, in the area due to the different groups. But the community was sufficiently large that you played mostly with Jewish boys. You didn't have any kind of girls. Well, boys, you didn't play with girls. You didn't have much contact. The school was very heterogeneous. I don't recall any problems. We had the one teacher I can remember was an Irish teacher. It was a stern disciplinarian. But it was a good school. And
what school number was it?
PS 149. Known historically, because that's where Danny Kaye went to school.
Well.
And in fact, he lived on the next block. I didn't know him personally, but my brother, he was of his age, knew him better. I can't recall anything in the neighborhood. Right. I didn't run into that until later.
How long did you go to school? Did you move
to
Pittsburgh?
I moved to Pittsburgh as an adult.
I see.
I did all my schooling in New York City. PS 149, which was converted into a junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Jefferson High School, which was built only four blocks away from my house, a brand new school in 1925. And, 1924 probably. I don't remember, 1924, 1925.
When did you go there?
Well, I went there for my 10th, 11th, and 12th grade because 149 had been made a junior high school, which included the 9th grade.
Yeah.
And it was new and very progressive at the time. It had some very good teachers, and it was a good climate. And we had a very ambitious, very good principal who has written something.
Lieberman?
Lieberman, you knew him. Did you run into him before, Elias Lieberman? And so actually it was a good school and a good curriculum. I was science-oriented. It did things which the school system hasn't done for 50 years. And it offered, I could take 4 years of mathematics at Thomas Jefferson High School. I took a year of chemistry and a year of physics. And I don't know whether I took a year of biology or not, but it was, the curriculum was very solid.
Then you were really prepared for college.
Oh, yes. I was quite well prepared. And you took Regents exams, you know. And, of course, if you wanted to go to college, and unless you were very unusual and had means, you had to go to City College, and City College was admitted solely on the basis, admission was based solely on your academic average.
Right.
And it was pretty high. You had to be about 89 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, the cutoff was simply how many bodies they could accommodate.
Right.
And so I got into City College.
And how was life at City College?
Well, it was in transition. The population was expanding. This was post-war, you know, 24, 25. And the higher education system was expanding. And so what they did was they opened up a branch in an office building downtown Brooklyn. And that's where I spent my first 2 years. And that was that was, I think, in retrospect, unfortunate. I would have benefited more from the going to the central school and what have you. But that was ultimately converted into Brooklyn College, which is a separate college. But after 2 years, I went up to the central school, City College in New York, and on 137th Street in Conduit Avenue, New York. Now, the curriculum was very good. Of course, the teachers were recruited from all sorts of places. You know, they were expanding, and it wasn't like the old timers, etc. And I had a very difficult time making the transition from Brooklyn to the Uptown campus because I got, you know, divorced from all my previous social contacts and what have you. So I had a very difficult adjustment. I left school for about a year, possibly. A year or so. And tried the outside world. You can imagine what it was like in 1932, 33.
The Depression.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, yes.
What were things like during... In other words, you took off from college for a year and then went back, I presume. So how was the world in 1936?
Oh, it was...
Six, is it?
Yes, it was pretty... No.
No,
32, 33.
32, yeah.
Well, it was pretty tough. I got a job as a, you know, as a packer. Have you ever heard of Sam Klein's, S. Klein's?
Sure, sure. Everybody knows that.
All right.
But what did they pay in those days?
Well, I think I don't know whether I started off at $7 or $8 a week.
A week.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I worked up to about, I got up to about $11 a week, and then I said, bye-bye.
Goodbye.
I went back to school. Well, my father worked all through the Depression. He was very good. He was an excellent tailor. And so he managed to have jobs all through. He just worked longer hours and harder, etc. Mm-hmm. So we never really knew any want. You know, it was always food on the table. And you had a few cents in your pocket. And by that time, my brothers, older brothers and sisters were out of the house, etc. And so... it didn't, it was tough. It was tough on some of our relatives who, you know, really had hard times. My mother was sort of the matriarch of the family, although, because none of her older siblings ever came over from Russia. She had a sister here, but who was older, but not as forceful socially as she was. But she had nephews and nieces here whom she... shepherded, and and they used to use our house as headquarters, and Saturday everybody would come to our house.
Yeah.
It's really quite remarkable. My mother came over at about 16 or younger. She was fully trained in the household arts. She could, you know, she could cook, she could bake, she could preserve, and do everything.
Yeah. Well, was she single naturally?
Yeah, sure. She was a kid.
And married.
I don't know the details of how it was arranged for her to come over. You see. Right. And well, it's too late now.
Well, you know what we didn't cover? We're supposed to get the names of all the children, but you have a big...
Yeah.
How many in the family?
There were eight survivors.
Eight, well...
My oldest brother was Abraham Louis. My next...
Abraham Louis. Bash.
And then, we call him Louis.
Uh-huh.
The next was Henry. Next in line was a sister, Fanny. Then my older brother Henry, then my sister Sarah, whom we call Seki.
Till he gets it down. Yeah, I know when I'm writing those names,
sure.
I get behind.
Sarah, whom we call Seki. My brother Izzy, Irving.
Yeah.
My brother Hi. My twin sister Evelyn and myself.
Do you have it?
Hi.
Let's wait a minute.
Who's your sister? Pardon?
And my twin sister Evelyn. Now, surviving today, my sister Sarah, my brother, hi, and my twin sister.
Do they live in this area? No?
They all live in Florida.
I see. Retired.
Yes, yes. Sure.
Yes. All right.
Wait a minute, they're all surviving?
No, no, the three of them.
Three.
Which are?
Sarah, Seki, my brother, hi, and my twin sister.
Mm-hmm. All right, do you think we spent enough time about your Hebrew school and your Sunday school?
Well, the salient point is that I essentially finished my formal religious education when I was a bar mitzvah.
I can't
be bothered with that. And we had a very active play life. You know, we played on the streets, but it was tremendously active. You wouldn't believe how much play, the games that were played on the city streets.
Did you play kick the can?
Oh, we played stickball and everything, and we had races, and we did all sorts of things on the streets.
Yeah. And how was life in the city when you were going to college?
Well,
that's New York City, I guess.
Well, it was turbulent years in New York, and the Depression, and then, of course, the election of 28 and the New Deal and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Do you remember what year that was?
Oh, well, he was 32.
Yeah.
No, not the election of 28, 32. And I remember being a watcher at the polling place.
Yeah. But you were a watcher in 32?
I wasn't quite old enough, but we cheated. I was 20 years old. Anyhow, those were turbulent times in New York, but I was fairly insular. You were kept so busy, you know, you went to school, you went to classes, you came home, you did your homework. If you were lucky, you had a little work on the side, and you made a couple of bucks. I mean,
that's right.
You didn't have time to visit the pool hall at the time.
No, or to take dope like they do today. So now we go into your fun and recreation. We covered the education at college. Did you do any graduate work, or was
As I say, I left school, then I went back. I graduated in 34, in February of 1934, and I was still at the bottom. There were no technical jobs available at the time. It was
Did you have a title of some kind when you?
I had a Bachelor of Science in Chemistry.
I see.
I had been talked out of going into chemical engineering, but by high school chemistry teacher, who had himself wanted to be a chemical engineer but never could break into the profession, probably because at his time, you know, Jews just didn't get into the engineering profession very much. But anyhow, he dissuaded me from going into chemical engineering and studying chemistry instead, which might have been all for the best, I don't know.
So, what was your first job? Do you remember?
Well, that's the point. You see, from 34 through most of 35, I had no job. I used to help my brother-in-law, who had an automobile repair shop, to make a few bucks, or for another brother-in-law who had a meat shop, to make a few dollars, but there was no form of employment. And finally, in 1935, I got put on by the New York City Air Pollution Survey, which was a WPA project, a Works Progress Administration project, but it had the advantage of being a technical one. So I had an opportunity to do technical and chemical work for a year. And during that period, of course, I indulged in the favorite sport of everybody else in my position, which was taking federal exams, exams for federal jobs. And finally, I was lucky. I landed one in Pittsburgh here.
Oh, then that's why you moved here. But before we leave this, for the record, explain what WPA meant.
Works Progress Administration.
Yes. What was
it? This was these were manufactured jobs.
By the government.
By the government, instead of the dole, you know.
Right.
And
Anybody was eligible, right?
Well, yeah.
Any citizen.
Who needed, didn't have a job.
Right.
And I worked, I was assigned to this project which a young engineer had dreamed up and sold to the authorities as a way of employing engineers. And there were about almost 200 of us associated with that. And I was assigned a particular type of work. And I was able to practice some techniques and operations which became useful to me when I applied for the job here in Pittsburgh, because yeah. I could say I had done this, that, and the other thing, and, which was germane to the job.
Right. Would you like to make a comment about WPA then, and why aren't they using it today?
Well,
they've never used it again.
Well, they are in some places. The magnitude of the situations was so different. I mean, people simply can hardly comprehend the depth of the depression. And the fraction of the people who didn't have employment or didn't have incomes. And just putting them on the dole, apparently, was not a socially acceptable thing for the people who tried to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So they... But they had a lot of make-do work and, you know, and the usual jokes about people who need these labor leaning on their shovels
right.
and all that sort of stuff. And some people took advantage of the situation, I'm sure. And for me, it was an opportunity. I desperately needed something right. to do that is along the scientific line. You have to understand, I had a problem at home because the only jobs and security seemed to be in the teaching profession. And my brothers had gone into teaching, etc. And my parents and everybody else said, you ought to go into teaching. And I said, no way, I don't want to have anything to do with teaching. I, you know, studied to be a chemist, I'm going to be a chemist. So I resisted that, and that's why this works. This project was of tremendous importance.
In Pittsburgh?
No.
The WPA, yes.
Was of tremendous importance to me because it allowed me to practice my, quote, profession, unquote.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the next question is, were you getting close to courtship and marriage, or is this too early in your career?
Were things happening? Well, I met my wife in the summer of, my wife-to-be, in the summer of 34.
In
New York, of course.
Brooklyn.
Yeah, good old Brooklyn. She was a nursing student at the Brooklyn Jewish Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't have any. She had even less means than I did. But we had an active courtship. I pursued her. Mm-hmm. And
you met her about 36?
No, 34.
34.
Summer of 34.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, and so...
she was nursing?
No, she was in nursing school. Mm-hmm. She didn't graduate until 36 okay. or 37. Mm-hmm. Anyhow...
And what was her name?
Charlotte. Adele Rod was her
name. Wait a minute, Charlotte
Adele Rod.
R-O-D.
Mm-hmm. Jewish, of course.
Oh, yeah. And she's been interviewed, too. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, but... You know, in those days, there was no ticky, no shirty. You either had a means to start a family or to get married, or you didn't, and that was it. So it wasn't until I came to Pittsburgh and, you know, saved up some money, and she saved up some money, that we were able to get married.
You sent for her then?
Oh, I sent for her.
Or she?
Yeah. I went up to New York, and we got married, that's all. Mm-hmm. And we had a conventional marriage, a father... For his means in the times, put her off in good style, but they didn't have very much money to go back. When I got this job in Pittsburgh, I didn't have a dime.
And what year would you, the date you were married, do you remember?
Yes.
Oh, sure, September 2nd, 1937.
September 2, 1937.
Good for you. Very few people remember that.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow.
So were you married in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
And then came back to Pittsburgh?
Oh, yeah.
Where were you living in Pittsburgh? Do you recall what area?
Oh, yes. I came to Pittsburgh on October 12th, 1936. I thought it was a holiday, a federal holiday, so I could travel on that day, but it wasn't. But anyhow, that's the day I elected to come. And I came here by bus, so I got a good look at Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I arrived in Pittsburgh at the East Liberty Station in a fog at night, and I stayed at the old YMCA, East Liberty Y. And the next day, I remember having breakfast at a, what the heck do you call it, a White Tower on the corner of Negley and Penn, and taking the 71 down here.
I know it well.
And when I got here, the fog was so thick, I stumbled on somebody. I finally found Forbes Street, and I stumbled onto somebody and asked them which way the Bureau of Arms was. And,
right up here.
Yeah, on the corner of Forbes and Craig.
Yeah.
And he pointed me. And, you know, there's a slight rise there.
Yeah.
The fog was in the lowest part, so by the time I got up there, I was able to see what the building was like. So I showed up there on the 13th of October, 1937. And
36, you said.
36, that's correct.
Yeah.
And that afternoon, you know, the sun, the fog dissipated, the sun came out. And one of the guys drove me around looking for a place. And I found a room in Squirrel Hill, very, very nice room, at 5855 Darlington Road. And I took the room and moved my, he helped me get my stuff out of the Y, and I was set.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I lived for a year. And when we got married, I had picked up a roommate from the Bureau of Mines, and he was down in Mexico on vacation, and that week we came back to Pittsburgh, and we were looking for a place and finally found a little third-floor apartment on Parkview Avenue.
On what?
A third-floor apartment on Parkview Avenue.
Parkview.
You know where Parkview Avenue is in Oakland?
Oh, in Oakland. And you must view the park from there.
Oh, yes.
That's why they call it Parkview.
Well, it was a dead end over the ravine where the bus went high. Anyhow, by that time, I had collected a circle of friends from the Bureau, from Pitt, you know.
Yeah.
I used to take my meals at Carnegie Tech.
Right.
You could get dinner for 45 cents.
Wow.
And I used to walk, to go to work, I'd walk down in the morning from Squirrel Hill and stop at the inn for breakfast, go to work, and then I'd have dinner, and then go back up to Squirrel Hill. And there were a lot of Pittsburgh boys whom I got to know who were at graduate school, you know, at college here.
Right.
They also took that their meals at
45 cents, that must have been the deluxe dinner. In
well,
days.
For on Sundays, for 50 cents, you got a steak.
Any minute, the tape's going to click. Mm-hmm. So how was it? What were you doing at the Bureau of Mines?
The Bureau of Mines, I was hired as a senior scientific aide. They use a little trick. They would offer you appointments at a lower grade than the exam you took. I mean, they cheated.
Mm-hmm.
But what the heck, you took the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got the offer, I took it. And I worked in the combustion section of the Bureau of Mines. We worked on burning of coal, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Were you into pollution at that early
oh,
time?
No.
Never heard of it, probably.
Well, no, that's not true. You see, I had worked on the, in fact, I was one of the pioneers in pollution. I'd worked on the New York City Air Pollution Survey in 35, 36. In fact, the man I worked for, the guy who organized that, a fellow by the name of Arthur C. Stern, later, many years later, became director of the Public Health Laboratory in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a well-known figure. I don't know if he's still alive or not. The last time I saw him, I ran into him at the airport in Washington, but this was many years ago. But I had been associated with that. And the Bureau had worked on projects like the effect of smelters, the sulfur dioxide from smelters, you know, on the surrounding
yes.
countryside. They had written reports and what have you. But I did laboratory work, and I got a very good education, a practical education in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
See, I had no engineering background. I learned my engineering at the Bureau of Mines.
How long were you with them then?
13 years.
Wow.
From 36 to 49.
I see. Then you probably got married, right?
Well, I was married in 37.
Right, and
our son was born in 41.
Okay.
And meanwhile, I had gotten a master's degree at Carnegie Tech in chemistry. And I had ambitions to get a PhD, but it was too tough, you know, with a kid and all that sort of stuff. So I was just dropped.
Son's name?
Howard Rod.
Howard
Rod. That's your wife's
maiden name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you recall where you first lived when you were married?
I got it.
On Parkview Avenue.
I got it.
That's right.
And we stayed there about 6 months or so, and then we were able to find an apartment at 234 Oakland Avenue. It was a second-story apartment. It was very nice.
And Oakland in those days was pretty nice, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's nothing wrong with Oakland. It was a very convenient place to live. Mm-hmm. I could walk to work, et cetera, which I did. In fact, for many, many years, I walked to work. It was quite a welcome change from New York. We had to take the subway to go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, what was the mode of transportation then?
Well, it was a trolley.
The trolley. No buses then?
No buses.
Unheard of.
Not yet. But I didn't use them because I wasn't involved. One thing was that there was some, it was very, very